With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast. My name, Sean Connery. My name is Keith Caulfield, and I am the Senior Director of Charts at Billboard. And joining me, as always, is Billboard's Deputy Editor, Digital, Katie Atkinson. Hello, Katie.
Hi, Keith.
How are you?
You know, getting through.
Getting through. Well, as always, the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast is your one-stop shop for all things pop on Billboard's weekly charts. In addition, you can always count on a lively discussion about the latest pop news, fun chart stats and stories, new music, and guest interviews with music stars and folks from the world of pop.
Today on the show, we have bottomless amounts of chart news about 5 Seconds of Summer, Jay-Z and Beyonce, XXXTentacion, Nas, and Christina Aguilera.
Yeah. For starters.
It never ends.
Plus, we've got an interview with Dan Reynolds of Imagine Dragons. Dan called in to talk about his new documentary film, Believer, which follows his journey to, as he puts it, speak his truth and to ignite conversation around what our LGBTQ youth are facing in the Mormon religion. And this is coming from one of our few Mormon rock stars that we have, Dan
Indeed.
Reynolds. So stick around for our enlightening chat with Dan in just a little bit.
But first, before we get started, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe to the show on iTunes or your favorite podcast provider so you won't miss an episode. And if you want to explore more podcasts from Billboard, visit billboard.com/podcasts.
Let's talk about some chart news, Katie.
Yeah, there's a little bit of action going on the charts this week, a little more than normal.
You don't say. Speaking as someone who works in charts, yes, some weeks we got nothing, some weeks we got a lot, and this week we have a lot. First up, 5 Seconds of Summer, or as we like to call them, Five Sauce, notches their third straight number one album on the Billboard 200 chart as Youngblood bows atop the list, dated June 30th. With 142,000 equivalent album units earned in the week ending June 21st, of course, according to Nielsen Music. They are the only band, we're talking band, not vocal group, band, to see their first three full-length studio albums debut at number one. I have all those caveats in there for a reason,
yes.
Because One Direction is a vocal group. And, of course, they debuted at number one with their first three albums. And One Direction has also had an EP and a live album. So we're only focusing on full-length studio albums from bands, people that play their own instruments. And you immediately think, wait, what about the Beatles? Didn't they have a bunch of number ones? Well, yes, they did. But they didn't debut at number one with their first three full-length studio albums. So lots of caveats, but still super interesting. Another fun fact.
Yes.
Five Sauce, who happens to be Australian, they are the only Australian act to notch three number ones on the Billboard 200
chart. Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I'm waiting for someone to jump out at me on Twitter and say, you forgot so-and-so, which is totally plausible, you guys.
Because Let them know.
I totally could have missed someone, but I thought I did counting pretty well. I even went back to, like, the 50s and was looking at certain artists. I'm like, was Andy Williams maybe from Australia? No, it's definitely not. Like, was Lawrence Welk? No, of course not. So, yeah, and so, you know, you might think, like didn't AC/DC have a bunch
of
number
ones? We have a lot of chart data on Australians, too, because we did that thing with the Australian Open a couple years back.
Don't think I didn't look at that.
Oh, yeah. We had the best, the biggest singles, the biggest albums, all from Australian artists.
Yeah, so you think, like, oh, what about AC/DC? Nope, they had two number ones. What about Keith Urban? He's had two number ones. Mm. So, yeah, it's crazy, but there you go. 5 Seconds of Summer, Five Sauce, of course, finishes ahead of the Carters. You know, that, you know, rising, little-known husband and wife duo of Jay-Z and Beyonce. As their first collaborative album, Everything Is Love, debuts at number two with 123,000 units.
And last week you wrote that it was kind of a race between Five Sauce and the Carters for number one. So what happened there?
Yeah, I think we actually kind of sort of teased that on the show. We're like, well, it looks like they should probably be number one. I mean, and that was sort of the common thought. And at one point last week, when we were looking at the numbers, most industry forecasters that I was talking to thought that it was going to be a race. And it looked like Five Sauce was going to do like 110,000 units. And this was like the middle of the tracking week. But people couldn't pin down what the Carters number was going to be because it was released on a Saturday. It was a surprise. It was exclusive to Tidal for like 2 days. And then, you know, it wasn't free on Spotify. And there's all these weird things that made it really hard to predict. But everyone kind of thought like, it looks like it's going to be kind of neck and neck. And then what happened was Five Sauce really engaged their fan base on Twitter, go figure, and was like, we're in a race for number one, and like basically like egged on all their fans to like buy more albums.
It worked.
And that's what the difference was. So that's how they ended up getting to be number one. They really engaged their fan base and got them to show up and turn up.
Indeed.
So next up, in the wake of the death of XXXTentacion, which we talked about last week on the show, and he died on June 18th, two of his albums actually returned to the top 10 on the Billboard 200, and his single Sad vaults to number one on the Billboard Hot 100. On the former chart, his former number one album, Question Mark, jumps 24 to 3, while another of his albums, 17, which peaked at number two last year, rises from number 60 to number 7. He has actually a third album on the chart farther down, so he's all over the place.
I have to say, usually I'm up on top of this stuff. I did not edit the Hot 100 article today. I'm just now learning that Sad is number one. Wow, I did not expect that.
I'm here to bring you chart news, Katie.
Indeed.
Yeah, over on the Hot 100, he scores his first number one as Sad climbs 52 to one.
So how long has it been since another artist has posthumously been number one?
A while. It last happened in 2008 when Static Major, who had died unexpectedly from internal bleeding in February of that year, topped the chart that May as the featured artist on Lil Wayne's Lollipop. Gary Trust, who manages the Hot 100, did a story online, or it's part of a story where he talked about the artist that had posthumously had number ones, and the list is pretty short. So in addition to XXXTentacion and Static Major, there's also Notorious B.I.G., John Lennon, Janis Joplin, Otis Redding, Jim Croce. I'm probably forgetting one or two people, but it's a fairly short list.
Yeah.
And interestingly, a good number of them had their first number one after they died.
Wow.
So,
well, that's definitely XXX's situation.
So, yeah, anyway. Lastly, Nas and Christina Aguilera both return to the Billboard 200 chart with their first new album since 2012. They like taking breaks. Certainly Christina. As Nas's Nasir. Is it Nasir?
Yeah.
Nasir? Okay. Yep. Nasir and Aguilera's Liberation both debut in the top 10. Nas starts at number 5, marking his 12th top 10 album. He's got an even dozen top 10s. And Aguilera bows at number 6, and that's her 7th top 10 effort. Christina has a very long time between albums. I wonder, are we going to have to wait like another like 4 years or 6 years between albums?
I feel like that's kind of how her generation of artists do it. I mean, that's Justin definitely waits that long, like 4, 5, 6 between albums.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. Now, it's time for our interview with Dan Reynolds of course, the rock band Imagine Dragons. The friend of the podcast called in to talk about his new documentary film, Believer, which made its HBO premiere on June 25th. The movie, as he describes it, is essentially about, quote, trying to ignite conversation around what our LGBTQ youth are facing in the Mormon religion on a daily basis and within Orthodox religion, end quote. It's also a behind-the-scenes look at the making of the Love Loud Festival, which Reynolds helped stage last year to help spark that same conversation. Reynolds, who is Mormon, and says that basically every single Imagine Dragons song has been about religious guilt, says the movie is also about him speaking his truth and not living a life that stifles his mind and heart. In the chat, we learn about a lot of stuff. Was he concerned about blowback he'd get being a straight pop rock star taking a stand on LGBTQ issues? Did he fear getting excommunicated from the church? There's a lot to talk about. So take a listen to our chat with Dan Reynolds. Hey, you make me a believer. Welcome back to the Billboard Pop Shop podcast. Dan Reynolds, how's it going, sir?
Good, thanks for having me.
You know, it was a year ago when we last talked on this podcast, and that was right before the Imagine Dragons album was about to come out, and since then it's had huge success, hit single after hit single, and you've been on tour seemingly for like the past year, at least since last September, and you're actually calling in from the road, I think, right now, and somewhere in all that free time you have, you decided to work on this documentary film, Believer, which made its HBO premiere on June 25th. I saw the movie last night, and I'm wondering, because I will do a very poor job describing it succinctly, can you describe to me what the movie is about at its core?
It's about trying to ignite conversation around what our LGBTQ youth are facing in the Mormon religion on a daily basis and on a wider note within Orthodox religion, and how certain teachings are hurting our youth and even killing our youth.
In the film, you know, we kind of watch, it's sort of like a cross between a like a making of a festival documentary, because much of the film follows you as you are putting together your Love Loud Festival last year, which took place in Provo, Utah. But at the same time, we also learn a lot about, it's sort of an expose teaching moment, sort of in a way, for those that aren't very familiar with the Mormon Church, about the church's views on LGBTQ people, as well as premarital sex with, you know, folks in general. Was there one particular catalyst that sparked this whole project for you? Because it's not like, it's not like being a Mormon is a new thing for you. You've always been a Mormon. So what was the spark that made all this happen?
I've been meeting with a therapist for 10 years now. I was diagnosed with depression many years ago, gone through a few different therapists. And this one that I'm with currently, we really spoke a lot about how important it was to speak your truth and to not live a life stifling the thoughts of your mind, the feelings of your heart, and especially with this platform that I've been given. I've really spent a lifetime doing just the opposite. I hate to disappoint people, hurt my family, hurt my culture. And because of that, I've really stifled my voice for the majority of my life. And so one of the things that I talked with my therapist about was to speak my truth, and especially about things that I've been holding in for a long time. And one in particular was, you know, started probably at the age of 13 when I was in middle school, and one of my best friends was gay and Mormon. And I watched the struggle that he had with trying to live what, you know, a faith that he believed, but that was also telling him that his innate sense of being that was unchangeable and perfect was flawed. And it was the first time that my heart didn't align with what I was being taught every Sunday, you know, which the other things I was being taught was, you know, be a good person, serve other people, families are forever, you know, you're going to die and be with your family in heaven. All those things sounded great. But this is the first time that I had a conflict about, you know, it didn't seem like it was right that my friend wasn't allowed to love in the way that he wanted, but I was. And I, in fact, my heterosexuality was celebrated. And so, you know, flash forward to high school, I lost a couple friends to suicide because of religious guilt. And I ended up getting kicked out of BYU because I had sex with my girlfriend. And that is, on a small level, that religious guilt that I felt, very small level, is what our LGBTQ youth feel every single day, which is that their sexuality, which is unchangeable, is flawed. And then they're given three options, which is either live a life of celibacy or enter into a mixed orientation marriage or relationship, which is marrying outside, you know, like a gay man marrying a woman, or three,
because that'll totally work. As a gay man saying that, I don't think that'll really work.
Right. Both of those options are obviously very healthy. And then the third one is to hide your sexuality and live, you know, be taught that you're living in sin. And all three of those, there's been numerous studies now that have shown that obviously all three of those lead to high suicidality, high depression, high anxiety rates. And so, at the end of the day, no matter what people believe and how much they want to believe it, if we just look at the facts, we know now why the suicide rate is, you know, 8 times higher for our LGBTQ youth when they're not accepted in their home or community. And then you look at Utah, which has one of the highest suicide rates in the nation and is predominantly Mormon, and the suicide rate has gone up 4 times now, which that's not happening anywhere else in the U.S. And, you know, I've seen people say, well, it's because of the altitude. Well, the altitude's not going up 4 times, so it's not because of the altitude. And so I think religious guilt plays a huge role in it. So basically, sorry for the super long answer, but it's kind of a complicated issue. So my goal is to try to fix a broken culture. And I know most people from the outside of religion would say, well, that's stupid. The easy answer is to leave the religion and tell all these LGBTQ youth to leave Mormonism. And sadly, you can't do that, because you may be putting these kids in a place of greater risk by telling them, hey, leave your family. You might get kicked out of the home if you leave the religion. So you're putting them in a greater risk. And on top of it, I think me leaving the religion because I'm upset about a doctrine isn't gonna help anybody. So my goal is to try to stay in it and try to create change from within, you know, and to put out the fire from within instead of just walking away.
So, and not to interrupt, but so this has always been kind of percolating within you, this struggle,
yeah.
And this, but I'm wondering, you know, because when I was watching the movie, you know, it seemed like maybe I was actually kind of wondering, did the movie start off as something else and then turn into what we saw? Like, did it start off as something else and then it morphed into Believer? Or because
yeah.
I was watching you read your emails from people, and so I'm just wondering, like, what sort of sparked the actual film itself?
So when I contacted the filmmaker, Don Argott, basically what I told him is, I'm going on a journey of truth. I've met, you know, with my therapist. This is something that I want to do. I need to speak my truth, and I want to do it in a way that is using my platform to create some sort of something. I didn't know what that was, and I knew that, you know, I had dealt with religious guilt. I knew that I was dealing with depression. I didn't exactly know where that was going to lead me. But what I was tired of was stifling my truth for fear of offending, you know, my family, my friends, whoever it was. And so we really didn't have a clear vision of what that meant and where that went. But it resulted in us sitting down and talking and him saying, you know, what does your life look like and what are the things that you've held in? And one of the main things was my feelings towards Mormonism. And it's always been something that whenever I talked about in the press, I just didn't want to talk about because, you know, it was something that was of conflict for me. And basically every single Imagine Dragons song, to to date, for the most part, has been about it, has been about religious guilt from our first song, you know? And I think probably most people don't know that because I'd really bury it within metaphors, and because that's how I've written since I was young, even when I was 13, when I was writing about feeling like, oh man, I don't know if this religion is right for me. I knew my mom and dad were going to listen to the song, and so I didn't want them to know what it was about, and so kind of buried it within metaphors. And so, long story short, yeah, I didn't exactly know where it was going to go, and then we sat down and talked, and kind of the documentary follows the process of me, you know, realizing that I needed to wake up and stand for something. And then being quiet for all these years about, you know, things that I was feeling in my heart, I was really standing for bigotry as a pacifist. And I think in this day and age, you know, if you're a silent voice, especially when you've been given a platform, I don't think you deserve a platform then, because we need people to take stands. And so for me, this is a real, this is a community that I'm part of that's broken and that's hurting. And, you know, I want to make a change. I want to help. I want to do something with my platform, or else, like I said, I don't think I deserve it.
You know, you talk about raising your voice, and that's not, I mean, actually, that's something a lot of, you know, pop and rock stars, you know, musicians do. But, you know, speaking as a gay person, speaking up for LGBTQ issues isn't exactly something that a lot of straight identifying male pop rock stars do on the regular. You know, we've got the pop divas on lock, but folks like you, it's not very common. You know, we've got the Gaga and, you know, Madonnas, sure. But, you know, we don't have Dan Reynolds of the world. So I applaud you for doing that. And I wonder, did you ever worry about any backlash or stigma, you know, that you might receive for raising your voice? Or were you just like, I got to do this?
A little bit of both. I mean, I knew that this is something that I needed to do, and a journey that I needed to take, even selfishly for myself, to speak my truth and to just feel free to be myself. But absolutely, I knew this is something that there will be people on the far right that will say this is, you know, too left for them, and they're upset with me. I've gotten so many emails and met with parents who are furious with me. They say, you know, you're going to go to heaven. I mean, you're not going to go to heaven. You're going to see God, and God's going to tell you, shame on you, Dan Reynolds. You made more kids gay. I've literally gotten emails from people who said just that. And that's what they believe. They think that I'm on this journey that's, you know, I've been liberalized by the world of music, and shame on me. And then I've gotten emails from the far left saying, you know, you're a heterosexual white man and you're capitalizing on LGBTQ issues to try to make your band more famous. And I think I knew already going into this, there would be people on both ends that would be upset, because I'm trying to bridge a gap in the middle. And I get it. Like, I get it. But at the end of the day, I know the journey that I'm on, and I know that I can make a change in a culture that is broken. And it takes a Mormon, sadly, to speak to the Mormons, because otherwise they just close their doors, because they've been hurt, and, you know, they're hurt by the Book of Mormon musical, and they're angry. And so when people yell at them, they just close the door. They just don't listen. At the end of the day, I get it. I understand that. But for me, I think it's really important. It's an important story to say, you know what? I'm Mormon, a white male who's been super privileged, and I have been living silently and not helping my community, and that sucks. And so I want to try to be better and be educated on how to be an ally, and this is what it looks like to become an ally. And I think that that's an important story to be told, and I think that hopefully there'll be other, you know, white Orthodox males and females from religious worlds that view this and say, you know what, I can become an ally too, and this is what it looks like, and not be ashamed of not being educated on knowing the correct pronouns and knowing what that looks like. And it might be messy, but you know what, I think that it's an important story to be told, and that's why I said, you know what, I'm usually a pretty private person. I don't love having people in my home and things like that. And I love my anonymity to a degree, but I think that this story is
that's all over with now, sir.
Yeah,
that anonymity is long gone.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm familiar with your three kids now. Yeah, we know more about you than you ever wanted us to know. yeah. I know we're probably we're running short on time, and I'm sure a publicist is going to jump in and say that you have to go. So I'll try to wrap this up. You know, in the film, we hear stories about folks that were excommunicated from the church. Were you ever worried that speaking your truth and making this film would get you excommunicated?
Yeah, I mean, the thought's definitely gone through my mind. For me, it's more for my family that is like, I don't know, I think obviously my mom would be devastated because basically what that means is you're telling my family that they're going to go to this place in heaven and I don't get to be with them. And for someone who really believes this with all their heart and soul, which for me, I've been conflicted about this since I was young. So there's days that I don't even believe in God, to be frank with you. But there's days that I want to believe that there's a God, and that, man, do I want to be with my little girls forever? Yeah, that sounds awesome. I would love for that. You know, is there some loving, like, deity up in heaven? I don't know what that person looks like, but are they cool? And do they want us to have, like, a life forever that's blissful? Do I want to believe that? Yeah, I mean, that sounds great. But do I know that? No. But does my mom believe every single tenet of Mormonism? Yes. She'll take that. She would die on the sword of Mormonism. So, yeah, it'd be devastating to my mom if I was excommunicated. And so I've definitely thought about that. But
I don't feel like it's going to happen, though. I think your voice is too loud now that if that did happen, that would be a PR nightmare, I think.
Right? Yeah. I would really hope that they wouldn't excommunicate someone for trying to say, hey, we're losing our LGBTQ youth to suicide and we need to love them. And then they're like, hey, that's not cool for you to say. See ya. You know what I mean? Like,
not the right message. Not the right message.
Stop loving our youth. You know?
Yeah. Well, we could talk forever, and I will graciously conclude our conversation by saying, you know, we're going to get a second Love Loud Festival July 28th in Salt Lake City, and this time you'll be joined by Imagine Dragons is going to be joined by Zedd, Mike Shinoda of Linkin Park, and Grace VanderWaal. There's all sorts of new music from Imagine Dragons and you. Imagine Dragons has a new track with Kygo that's out, Born to Be Yours. And then there's Skipping Stones, a track that is credited to you and Hans Zimmer that's in the movie.
Yeah, crazy.
There's just so much going on with you right now. So thank you so much for taking the time to talk about the movie. And much success to you with this film. And try to stay sane on the road because you're not exactly a not very busy person right now.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time and hope to talk to you again soon. I'm sure I'll see you somewhere soon.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you. Take care.
Skipping stones, I'm skipping stones, I'm skipping stones, I'm skipping stones.
Thank you again so much, Dan. Make sure to check out the Believer documentary, which is airing now on HBO. And the second Love Loud Festival will take place in Salt Lake City on July 28th. And you can check out all the information about the show at loveloudfest.com. And now, we need to come up with another transition instead of "and now." It's time for the chart stat of the week. This week in 2012, Imagine Dragons, you may have heard of them, made its Billboard Hot 100 debut with It's Time. The single arrived on the list dated June 23rd, 2012, and eventually peaked at number 15 the following January. It's one of those long and winding roads to the peak. So far, the band has collected 13 hits on the list, including the longest charting song ever in the nearly 60-year history of the chart, Radioactive. The cut peaked at number 3 back in 2013 and spent, well, Katie, can you guess how many weeks the song spent on the chart? And it still holds the record.
Wow.
Still holds the record for the longest amount of time spent on the chart. And in fact, in the Believer documentary, there is a plaque on Dan's office wall that recognizes and mentions how Radioactive is the longest charting song ever.
That's great.
Yeah.
Is it? It's more than a year.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not more than 2 years.
Not 2 years, though.
Okay. That gives me a good window. I'm going to go with 75 weeks.
You're not too far away.
Oh, what is it?
It's actually 87.
Man, that is impressive.
Yes.
That's unbelievable.
87 weeks. Yeah, so it peaked at number three, but spent a hell of a long time on the chart.
Yeah.
I mean, and that proves just how popular Imagine Dragons are.
They're my nephew's favorite band.
Really?
7-year-old nephew.
Aww.
He sings them all the time.
That's cute. Well, there you have it. Imagine Dragons made their Hot 100 debut this week in 2012 with It's Time. Okay, we reached the end of our show. Any parting words, Katie?
Well, let's see. Feels like a very Imagine Dragons-centric show. Maybe we should go out with a song by them that we haven't heard yet.
Well, we've already heard Believer.
Mm-hmm.
We could, I mean, we haven't actually heard Radioactive or It's Time yet, because we don't actually play it during
I'm
the
chart. I'm
actually
a huge fan of It's Time.
Well, then
the first hit for them.
We can sort of bookend the, you know, show with their first hit.
Love it.
See you guys next time.
Bye.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.